assuming. If it's running, it's at the end of the chip. Okay. So, I just want to take a look at the parasha. B'chukosai, the beginning of the parasha. Interesting thing. Right, so the parasha starts in B'chukosai te'lechu v'es mitzvosai tishmeru v'asisam osam. Right, so if a person follows the Torah, does the mitzvos, and then you have the brachos. V'nasati gishmeichem be'itam. You'll have rain. V'nasma ha'aretz v'vula. Crop, ve'etz asada, yitim pirio, right? All of the, you'll have plenty of crop. Ve'hisig lechem dayish as butter, butter yasig as zara. You have an overabundance, right? You'll be still involved with threshing when it's the time to harvest to vintage the grapes, right? And then the grapes, you'll still be collecting grapes when it'll be time for planting, so it'll be such an overabundance. Okay, achaltem lachmachem lasova. Okay, so you'll eat with satiation. Vishavtem levetach. You'll dwell levetach with secure ba'artzachem in your land. Okay, so right. Then the pasuk says, "When asati shalom ba'aretz, I'll give peace in the land." Ushachavtem. You can lay down, you could sleep, vein macharid, you don't have to worry. V'hishbati, chayara, min ha'aretz, I'll get rid of all of the wild animals. V'cherev lo savar ba'atzachem. And the sword will not pass through your land. Okay? So it sounds very good. You'll have all of the material needs, and you'll have shalom. Right? And Rashi says, because if you don't have shalom, then what good is all of the material needs? Okay? Next pasuk says, Uradavtem esoyveichem v'naflu l'fneichem l'charef. You'll chase your enemies, and they'll fall before you by the sword. V'radfu mikem chamisha mea. And five, you'll have five, a group of five could chase 100. You'll be so successful in war. Umeya mikem rvava yerdofu. And a group of 100 of you will cause 10,000 to flee. V'naflu oyvechem lifneichem l'charef. Your enemies will fall from before you by the sword. Okay? So, I don't understand it. I mean, it sounds like a bit of an inconsistency because the pasuk tells you you're going to have peace. You're not going to have to worry. You could sleep without any fear. And then the very next pasuk tells you you're going to be running after your enemies. Right? What enemies? With peace. I mean, it doesn't seem like that's really a description of peace. To talk about peace and then have a description of how successful you'd be at war. Sounds like these are two opposites. I mean, would anybody consider Israel? Israel is a state of peace. I mean, okay, they're right. They're very successful against their enemies, right? But they constantly have enemies. This is a constant state of war. So what is this peace that the apostle is talking about? You're going to sleep without any fear. Except you have to run after your enemies.
Redacting means like you're pursuing, you're going to chase them, right?
Chase them?
Yeah.
They'll run away from you. Okay, they'll run away from you. You'll be successful. But you still have to fight. You know, it's not saying that they're just going to lay down without anything. Yeah, you have to, if you don't plan, obviously, if you don't plan for war, if you don't make out a good plan, it doesn't mean that magically five of you are going to appear and they're just going to disappear. No, it means that you'll use your chachma and you'll succeed. Okay. You still have to fight a war. Still have enemies, plenty of enemies running after you, 10,000 enemies.
Right, so
what is Shalom? You're right. You'll dwell in security. What do you say?
It's really a problem.
What's that?
It's a problem.
It's a problem. It's a problem.
V'nasati shalom ba'aretz.
Yeah.
Shalom is not necessarily in your relationship with the nations of the world.
Okay.
It's within the land.
Okay. Good.
So, that doesn't mean people outside are not going to try to destroy that.
Right.
So, keeping the shalom in the land is going to have to involve driving other people out and making sure that they're not, taking that away.
Right. Your borders are secure. You need walls. Yeah. You need border. Right. You have to build a wall. Right. You need secure borders, and defense. Right. Okay. So very good. So take a look at the Ramban. So the Ramban says, "Menashati shalom ba'aretz." He says, "Shiyu shalom beinechem." There'll be peace among you. V'lo solacham o'ish be'achiv. A man and his brother won't fight. Okay? So the Ramban was bothered by this. What it seems like an inconsistency. But the Ramban says, if you look closely at the pasuk, you see there's no inconsistency. Because the pasuk doesn't say, v'nasati shalom. Right, it qualifies it. Nasati shalom ba'aretz, in your land, meaning domestic. There'll be domestic peace. Right, so it doesn't guarantee you an absolute peace. It's a domestic peace. It's not a universal. It's not an international peace. It's domestic. Right. So the pasuk, there's no inconsistency in the psukim.
But isn't peace?
Okay. Right. Can't argue with that. Right? Isn't peace peace? I mean, in other words, yeah, you could say, right, the pasuk's only telling you domestic peace. But I mean, is that real peace? Is that what kind of a bracha is that? You tell me. I mean, the bracha before was an abundance, overabundance, unlimited agricultural success. Right, it comes to peace, the pasuk, it's not exactly unlimited. It's a limited peace. Okay, you won't fight with each other, but you're going to have plenty of enemies that are going to run after you. So it's true that you could say, well, okay, internally we have peace, domestic peace, but we're being attacked from all sides. So in terms of the bracha, it seems like that's a severely limited bracha. Especially Rashi says that the pasuk first gives you the success, all your material needs will be met, and then the pasuk says shalom. Why? Because if you don't have shalom, what good is all the material success? But I mean, if that's the case, so then you need a shalom, an absolute shalom, not just domestic peace, because I'll ask, if you have domestic peace, but you're constantly at war with your enemies, so you could say the same thing. What good is all of the material goods, but you can't enjoy it because you're constantly engaged in warfare with your enemies. True, you'll be successful, but still you have to involve yourself. It's a constant battle. So you could say that's not really... It's true logically, there's no inconsistency, but is that real peace? Is that real shalom? Would you call that shalom? You have to say Israel's a shalom, they have peace. Because there's no civil war, there's no domestic, they have domestic peace. But I don't think anybody would consider that a real state of shalom. Right? What do you say? And I'll mention another question that I had, which was, if you look at the Rashi, Venasati Shalom, I mean, at first glance, it makes sense. But if you look really what he's saying, there's a little bit problematic. Because Rashi says, when Asati Shalom, right? So Rashi says, Shema Tomru, Hare Michael, Hare Mishta. Maybe you'll say, I have food, I have drink, right? I have all my necessities. Im ein shalom, ein klum. If I don't have peace, so I don't have anything. What good is it? I have all these things, but I can't enjoy them. My existence is in jeopardy. Okay. So Rashi says Talmud Lomar, Achar Kol Zos. That's why he teaches you after all of these brachos, V'nasati Shalom Ba'aretz. I will put peace in your land. Okay. Then Rashi says Mikan Shehashalom Shakol Keneged Hakol. From here you learn that Shalom is equal to everything. So I don't understand that last sentence. I mean, up to then, it makes sense, he's saying. Your agricultural needs is just one factor. A person needs many things to have a good life, and that's and his food and drink, his sustenance, is a means to having a proper existence. But it's not the only means, so too, a person needs shalom. If you have war, that's also could be an impediment to living a good life. But what does that mean that shalom is equal to everything else? It's not equal. It's another means. It's another factor that a person needs. Right? On the contrary, I would say that the Michael Mishta, I would say, if you're going to say anything is the primary thing, I would say Michael Mishta. I wouldn't say war. If you gave a guy an opportunity, he could live in a land where there's perfect peace, but there's nothing to eat and drink, I mean, how long is a guy going to last there? Or you tell a person, listen, I'll give you a land where there's plenty to eat and drink, but there's war. Okay? There's war, even internal war. But still, I have a chance I could live. Right? I could do something to deal with the situation, but if I don't have food and what to eat, there's nothing to talk about. So how can you tell me that shalom is the primary thing? And without that, that's the whole basis for everything. No, on the contrary. You could certainly reverse the statement. You could say, Imein Michael Mishta ain't klum. You could say the reverse. If I have shalom, but I don't have Michael Mishta, so what good is the shalom? So I don't see why Rashi seems to be saying that the shalom is the, you know, special thing. That's the primary thing that's equal to everything else.
It seems like once you have shalom, you're going to have Michael Mishta. It's not possible to have shalom without Michael Mishta. Once there's shalom in, once shalom exists, everything else is going to fall into place.
Okay. Well, not really, because let's say you have no war, but there's famine in the land, right? There's no rain,
right? But that's true.
But there's peace. There's nobody fighting. But we have nothing. People are starving.
The shalom's a total shalom.
What's that?
The shalom is a total shalom. We're talking about like no wars at all.
No. That's what it says, because the pasuk says you'll have shalom in your land, and then the next pasuk says that you're going to be fighting your enemies. So obviously,
but
it's not a real shalom.
The Michael Mishta we're talking about, that you're going to have, like, what is
Michael Mishta? The land will be very productive, agricultural, tremendous success, and then the pasuk tells you you're going to have domestic shalom, right? Not between nations, but domestic shalom. So, of course, obviously, if you don't have shalom, the other things are lacking, because what good are the other things if you can't enjoy them? Fine, but that just means shalom is another element in as a prerequisite for having a proper existence. You need many things. I need air also. I could say air is connected. Shakul connected kolam. If I don't have air, well, what good are all the other things? I mean, each factor is a necessary factor. It doesn't mean that one is somehow equal to everything. Well, what does that even mean? Right? And even if that were the case, the Pasuk's not teaching you that. He seems to imply, Rashi says, that Tamalomar Achakozos Masachitam Bahars Mikan Shakol Keneged Kulam. What do you mean Mikan? If it is the case that Shalom is a necessary ingredient, so then it's a necessary ingredient. So you don't get that from the Pasuk. It's not like a Gezeres HaKasuv. From here you learn that Shalom equals everything. What does that mean? You know what I mean? If Shalom really is a primary thing, so we don't learn from here, it is. It's a real thing. You don't learn from here that you need Michael and Mishnah. That we know. So too, we know a person needs Shalom. You know what I mean? It's something you don't get from the Pasuk.
What kind of Shalom are we talking about? I mean, are there different types of Shalom?
Okay. You tell me.
Good question.
What's that?
Good question.
Good question. All right, so let's just sum up. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm still not clear on the question, though. I feel like I'm missing an element. Is it possible you could repeat the question just a little bit?
Sure. I was just going to sum up. So here's the questions. Okay, we have maybe... I'm not sure, but the first question was the basic question, that in the psukim you find an internal contradiction, because the psukim say there'll be shalom, you'll be able to dwell in your land with security, and then the very next pasuk tells me you'll run after your enemies and they will fall before you. So that is a contradiction, because you can't tell me there's a state of peace and I'm running after enemies. That means I'm at war. So I'm at war and peace at the same time. Okay, that was question number one. Okay?
Okay.
So, the question number two was that Rashi says that from here you learn, Rashi says that the Pasuk promises you agricultural success, and then it promises you shalom. So Rashi says, why? Because if you don't have shalom, what good is the material success without shalom? So therefore, the pasuk promises you shalom. But then Rashi says, and from here we learn, shalom is equal to all of the others. All the brachos together, shalom is equal. Well, I don't see where you get that conclusion. You could say shalom is a necessary ingredient just like food and drink, but it doesn't show you that shalom somehow is superior to the other things. On the contrary, I would say the other things are superior to the shalom. Shalom is a means, but certainly if you had a choice between shalom and sustenance, you'd pick sustenance. Can't live a day without sustenance. Okay, so those are the two questions. One is a question on Rashi, and the second one is just a question on the basic psukim. An internal contradiction in the psukim. Okay?
All right, yeah, thank you.
Okay. So, right? Okay, so the first question, Yisrael gave an answer, which is the Ramban. The Ramban says, if you look closely at the pasuk, it doesn't say shalom, unqualified. It says Shalom Ba'aretz. So the Ramban says, what does it mean, Shalom Ba'aretz? So he says it means domestic shalom, that there'll be shalom b'neichem, among you, among the Jews. Okay? But the next pasuk is said, but there won't be shalom, you'll still have enemies. You'll still have enemies that you have to deal with. And you'll have to deal with them, and that's why the bracha of the next pasuk is, you'll be successful in that realm too. So you'll be successful internally, you'll have domestic shalom, and also with regard to international, you'll be successful at defending yourself from your enemies. Okay? So therefore the Ramban says there's no contradiction in the Pesukim. Okay? Because the Pesuk never promised you absolute peace. It promised you a domestic peace. Okay. But then, we had the question Ariel asked, Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very nice. Very nice. There's no internal contradiction. But is that really shalom? If the Torah is giving you a bracha of shalom, it seems the shalom is an extremely limited one. Okay, if we looked at Israel today, you'd say, okay, same thing. They have that bracha, that they have domestic peace. They're not, I mean, whether, you know, I'm just saying on a superficial level. Right? There's no civil war, there's domestic peace, the country's at peace internally. But nobody would say Israel lives in a state of peace and they're dwelling securely in their land. No, they constantly have to worry about enemies that are trying to kill them. And it's true, they're very successful. You could say about them that a group of five soldiers could chase away 100, and a group of 100 soldiers could chase away 10,000 of the Arabs. They're very successful. They're very small in number, and their enemies are very great, and yet they succeed to repel them. But nobody's going to say that they have the bracha of shalom. So the question is, what type of bracha is this? It seems very limited. Okay, why didn't the Torah wants to give a bracha of shalom? And also, if you have that kind of peace, what Rashi's saying is not necessarily true. If I have this kind of shalom, but a person could still say, well, you know, I can't really totally enjoy the other bracha. The purpose of the shalom was to be able to reap the other bracha. But if you're constantly in a state of war with others, you could say, imein shalom, ein klum. This is not a good way to live. So if he's talking about the kiyum of the bracha, which is to give you a secure life so a person could pursue the Torah, the Derech HaChaim of Torah, here you have it. It's not so secure. Okay. Right. So that's the question. What kind of a bracha is this of shalom? Okay, so Ariel, what do you want to say? You were having a good approach.
I guess I was. I don't really have anything except for the. Maybe you could try to understand exactly what is peace, and are there different types of shalom?
Good.
Are
there different types of shalom? That's right. So are there?
Could be.
Okay. So what different types of shalom do we have? Yeah.
I mean, it seems apparent that there's no such thing as world peace. It's unattainable. But I mean, like the commonly referred to idea of world peace.
Good.
Everyone gets along and no countries fight together. Because, I mean, instinctively everyone's going to be fighting. No one's going to agree with everyone else. And they're going to want to change their minds or take their territory or whatever it is.
Right.
So it's never possible to really find other societies that you're going to agree with. It's possible to find like a society that you might agree with and would be peaceful within that society. I guess it's Sorrell's point, but...
That's right.
But you're going to have, obviously, war. You're going to have to chase out enemies because they're not going to like your society. They're going to wage war with you, but in the end, you're going to have a society where you agree with their concepts and their way of life, and there's going to be peace of mind of knowing that you're with a society that's really... I guess, good-minded.
The what?
It has a similar philosophy to you.
United group. Yeah. That's good. Right. So are there different types of shalom? Could the term shalom be used in more than one way?
Maybe.
Yeah.
In terms of like a nation's shalom, it could be different than an individual shalom.
Okay.
I mean, but back to Yisrael's question, speaking about an individual, if he lives in a society where there is just shalom in general, and everyone's doing what they're supposed to be doing, there's no war. Then everything will fall into place. You will have everything. It's like your mind, an individual's mind in that society will be at ease.
Sure.
But you're right. You can't stop it. You can't stop other people from attacking. It's just impossible. You have to, you know, be realistic. And, you know, a nation strong is... I guess there is no nation strong from other people. I don't know. But, I mean, you know.
So the one type of shalom is
an individual.
An individual
within a nation.
Okay.
I don't know what a nationalistic shalom is.
When you say one type of shalom is an individual, what does that mean? Like between two individuals, you mean?
What about it's like making a society?
Like a society shalom?
Yeah. Within a certain group.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Right, within a certain group.
But like one society and another, that cannot have shalom.
That cannot have shalom.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Okay, but the shalom that an individual has. Why does he have shalom and the group can't have shalom? And one society with another society can't have shalom. Well, why? You say they have a small group, so you can have shalom?
Small groups?
Why do you have shalom there? I mean, theoretically, if you have shalom in a small group, so you could say, okay, the group's a little bigger. Okay, have shalom. Now the group becomes... At what point do we say, oh, nah, that's too big. No shalom.
I mean, I don't know, if you look at Israel as a whole, I'm just using that example, like, I don't know if I'm really answering anything, but Israel as a country, and there's always going to be war, you know, like Gaza, you know, people in Gaza trying to break in, but people in Yerushalayim, they're celebrating, they're happy about, you know, the embassy moving there. I mean, they're not really feeling the intense pressure that maybe the government...
Well, what's okay, but what's the idea of shalom? In other words, what brings about shalom? What brings about shalom?
Maybe like a sense of like nationalistic identity. Like you feel like they're like your comrades.
Comrades, okay. Is that a good shalom? Is that a lasting shalom? It's a shalom that lasts as long as I feel that he's like me. He's my comrade. The moment he... you know, expresses his own interests that don't coincide with mine, there's no shalom.
Then really, no shalom can ever last.
No shalom can ever last. So what's, right, because the shalom is always, right, the reason why can't nations, different nations be in shalom, because there's no common goal, right? If you have one nation, so they all have a common goal. Right, so that lasts as long as they all have the common goal. But the moment this guy has interests that diverge from mine, because he's a yachid, that's why you could have a nation which doesn't have civil war, but I might be fighting with my next door neighbor because, you know, his sprinkler is watering my fence and might cause the fence to deteriorate a little prematurely. So I can't get along with that guy, obviously. Yeah.
I'm not understanding your question. Well, based on what I'm trying to say.
Because what you're saying is, it sounds like a shalom of pragmatism, right? In other words, I can't get along with theirs because our goals are too diverse, right? Or I can't get along with, right? But the among Klal Yisrael, our goals are pretty closely aligned, so we could maintain shalom, right? Because we have closely aligned goals until one of my goals diverges with yours.
Well, I mean, the Torah is, you know, saying in the ideal, if you follow these mitzvos, we're all going to have the same ideas and the same similar perfected goals. And that said, then there shouldn't be any conflicts amongst ourselves.
Okay.
I'm saying within ourselves, we're gonna have this certain idea of perfection.
Okay.
that we could have amongst ourselves, but with the Muslims, that'll just never happen.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
We're living under a universal system of the Torah, which if everyone accepts, then we're gonna have it, you know?
Well,
But
even along those lines, you still have, even if everyone's living under the Torah values in that system, like, there's still going to be different opinions. There's still, people can still differ in terms of certain, different categories in terms of...
Different, you know, it's personal type, there's personal issues, okay.
Yeah, everyone has...
We all have the same karma goal, yes, but, you know, within that common goal, I mean, there is room for strife.
What kind of stuff are we talking about?
Like I said,
it's not like
neighbors.
I don't think I'm gonna go to my neighbor and plot a gun, but like turn off his sprinklers.
I'm gonna go to that extreme.
You won't start off that way, but if the neighbor doesn't turn off the sprinkler eventually,
I mean, I'm saying you're always gonna have arguments, but
right.
It's not a war.
Okay. It's a
It seems like the Torah is trying to explain that I don't know. I'm just trying to put an idea here that peace is not necessarily just something that just comes. It's something that more is being fought for, and more of just something that we try to maintain. Meaning, because domestically, you could say that if there's common goals. I think, like you said earlier, I think Arno was saying, look at Israel. I mean, Israel domestically, when everyone's on the same page and everyone, it's an abundant land. It's a fruitful land, and everyone's trying to get to that. All other countries are trying to get to that, or they're trying to have that. And I think what it's trying to teach us is that you have to fight for something, or you have to hold on to something that's really like to hold on to something that's really good. But in order to do that, you gotta you gotta stand up for it. I told you, it's somewhere in there.
Okay, very good, very good. You're getting there. You're getting close. You're getting there. What did you want to say?
Yeah. I was just wondering, might be similar to what Ariel's saying. I mean, why does peace have to mean you're not necessarily arguing with your neighbor or something like that? Like,
what else would it mean? Like, there's no civil wars? Like, it's not like much of a problem.
No, I mean, all in all, okay, let's say usually when there's a time of war or a time of political unrest, especially back then, I mean, that means that at any given moment, your house, your livelihood could be under siege or anything like that. You just can't live in a state of comfort.
Right.
But just because your neighbor has a sprinkler system on in a way that annoys you, that's not good, you know, but I wouldn't say that, like, tears down the walls of peace.
Right.
I mean, unless, you know, we're defining peace like that, I just don't think that the way I would generally understand peace, that would be like a stira to it.
Okay. You do not torture your neighbor's house with your system on?
Okay.
That's not Egg's house.
It seems like that, like, situation is like, whatever sprinklers, whatever, you know, situation we can think of.
Right.
It's just like it's dependent upon that. Once the sprinklers go off, then you're back to where you were.
Right.
So, yeah.
I mean, maybe Ryle would have we have a nevuah, and this is, I guess, one of the sources of the nevuah, that in Yemos HaMashiach there will be some sort of universal peace, while at the same time we'll also have Batei Dinim and stuff like that.
Right.
So, while there's a general assumption that during Yemos HaMashiach, like, people will be more, I guess the world will be such that everybody will be able to, I guess, live, you know, wholesome lives in line with, you know, some general idea of, like, Avas Hashem and whatever. You'll still have probably individuals who will commit aviras or domestic problems such that you'll need batei dinim, it seems like.
Right.
So I feel like the two are not mutually exclusive. You can have peace while still having some level of, you know, domestic unrest.
Right. Okay.
In a minor capacity.
Right. Okay. I mean...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I understand. Okay. Let me just clarify. I think what you say is correct. Let me just give a little clarification, okay, and see if this increases the clarity or confuses the issue. Okay? So we start off saying maybe there's more than one type of peace, right? So the thing is, maybe we could say like this, that there are two types of peace. Okay, one peace is a like a functional peace, a practical peace, where you have two countries that make a treaty. They make a treaty. They don't necessarily love each other. They don't necessarily see eye to eye. But they agree to disagree. Okay? So they make a treaty, and the treaty results in peace. There is no active conflict between these two groups. Okay? That's a functional peace. That peace, okay, it depends. Sometimes it breaks down. Okay? Because it's just a practical implementation of peace. Okay? But there's another kind of peace. And that is, that's a peace that results from an internal peace. You see, you could also use the term peace or harmony to describe a person's internal nature. Right? Wars don't only occur between men. Wars also occur internally. A person is at strife with himself. He's at conflict with himself. You see? And if you analyze, you'll see that the strife, the conflict between two individuals is always a result of the conflict between the person and himself. You see, if a person doesn't have a conflict between he and himself, usually things don't bother him so much about other people. Usually what bothers a person about somebody else is because there's something bothering him internally. You see, like for instance, the Chazal say, right, kol haposel, anybody who finds fault, defect in somebody else, b'mumo posel, he's posseling him with his own mum. You see, very often when it's something bothers you about the other person, if you look closely, you'll see, why does it bother you so much? How are you so sharp to notice that? Because you have that in yourself. You see, oh, that guy's a tricker. He's a tricky guy. Why? Yeah, he's a tricky guy. Bothers you. Because he's very successful at something you have. You see, you have a trickiness. You see, that you're in conflict with. You don't want to. You're fighting against yourself, you see. So that you take the fight outward. It's a person always wants to take the fight outward, not keep it in. You see. So like you find many cases of this. You find, like, recently, the Attorney General of New York, New York State, Eric, what's his name, Schneiderman? What was his whole thing? His whole thing was going after and trying to prosecute people that abuse women, right, that mistreat women, you see, and to expose them, and to stand up for the women's right movement. And it turns out, this is his very problem. And he's accused of mistreating women. How could this be? You see? Because the answer is, when a person discovers in somebody else something that bothers him internally, it becomes very bothersome when he finds it in somebody else. Yeah?
I don't know, just a question on that, just in okay, like a good. Separate conversation.
Yeah.
But, why would you prosecute someone that you do yourself?
That's what I'm saying, because it's so much easier. It's much, I don't know, easier, but it feels better to take it out than to hold it in.
Why? Because you don't want to.
Why
aren't
you supportive of abusing women if that's what you do? Do you make it part of the system?
Yes, if you thought that was a good thing, if it didn't bother you about yourself, you're right. Then no problem, you go out supporting it. But obviously, it's something a person is ashamed of. You see? So when a person's ashamed of something, he doesn't want to admit it. He doesn't want to admit that he's ashamed of it. You see, he can't control himself. He feels very, very insecure. He has internal insecurities. So a person that feels bad about it, a person doesn't feel bad, he's a sociopath. Okay, no problem. You're not going to have to worry about that guy. But if you're talking about the normal person, if a person has a defect, he feels embarrassed and he feels insecure about it. So what does a person do? Well, one One possibility is that the person looks into himself and tries to either come to grips. He says, listen, I'm human. This is my nature. I can't do anything about it. Or say, listen, let me try to improve myself. That's one approach, to look into yourself and be honest with yourself. The other approach is, which is the easier approach, more common approach, is, what do you mean? Look at this other guy. He's even worse than me. And to concentrate on the defect of the other guy. That relieves a person's sense of insecurity. You see, because now in the public eye, he's an honorable guy. And in his private life, he somehow works out that out in his mind. And the image of himself becomes how others look at him. And regardless of what he really is, he doesn't concentrate too much on that. So it allows the person the ability to reinstate his self-image through the public arena. And if he can't do that, he's going to feel very bad about himself. So the person doesn't want to feel bad about himself. So it's more fun to attack another guy, put another guy down, than to put yourself down. So that's really a major cause of the war. Because you see, when you look at wars, they're about nothing. What are they about? Right? They're not about anything. They're essentially, right? A war or a conflict between two people, when you look into it, you find it's senseless. There's no purpose to it. It's totally meaningless. There's no real significance. When you look into it, you say it's a stupidity. What's that?
What do you mean?
Let's say war. It's a stupid thing. One guy wants power. Why does he want power? I don't know. Not going to improve his life. He just wants power. He wants to be able to control other people, torture other people. Why? We don't know. If you ask the guy and you sat down with the guy, is this helping you? Is there a purpose? What's the purpose of this? When it comes down to it, there's no purpose other than the person got in his mind a certain idea that's crazy. And he decided he's going to implement this. Because somehow he got in a situation where he could implement it. But if that situation was taken away, and he wasn't able to implement it, so it would be something that he'd forget about. He'd say, oh, this is, who needs this? If he was in a different situation, he would never do it. That's why other people look at him and say, well, what is this guy nuts? You see, but the answer is, it is nuts. It doesn't come from anything reasonable. You see, but it comes from an insecurity and a frustration, an internal frustration. That's why when a guy's, everything's going great in his life, he feels great, he doesn't have any problems, and people don't bother him. You know what I mean? When a regular person comes, you know, gets in a certain situation where everything's great, perfect, another guy insults him, oh, who cares? You know what I mean? Everything he's mavarami doso. Nothing bothers him. The thing that would bother him yesterday, all of a sudden, another guy, I don't know, crashes his car. Okay, it's only a physical thing. I don't care. No problem. Right? 2 days ago, if the person, got a nick on his wall, he'd go berserk. You know what I mean? So it's not the outside thing that is creating the conflict. It's the internal. That's what bothers a person. And that's what brings him into a situation of strife. It's the internal strife. You see? So that type of shalom is not dependent on a treaty. That type of shalom, if you have that shalom, you see, then there can't be a war. It's not shy to have strife. It's not something that could break down because there's no the source of the mechama is gone. You see? So that's what I was saying. If a person follows the Derech HaChayim of Torah, and it'll improve his nature. Once it improves his nature, it's not the pshat he's going to control himself or use his self restraint, his will, his willful, you know, his will to control himself and not to fight with his neighbor. He simply won't find anything to fight about. You see, nothing bothers him about the neighbor. He's happy to relate normally to the neighbor because he doesn't have his internal nature is improved. You see, so he's naturally just a nice person. What we describe as a nice person. You see? But that type of shalom comes from an internal shalom. You see? So that's really the bracha. And that's why, you see, but that's not going to help you with regard to other nations. There you're talking about another kind of shalom. You're talking about we have to impose, create a functional shalom. So we'll make a treaty with them. They're not going to love us because they don't have the internal shalom. They don't have the Torah. You see? So there the Torah is promising you that in dealing in the functional realm, there you'll be successful. Either you make a treaty, or if you can't make a treaty, you'll be able to defend yourself. You'll be able to create a situation where you could have a functional ability to defend yourself against your enemies. You see? But internally, between the Jews and themselves, that would not be a bracha. To say that each person is very vigilant and makes sure not to offend his neighbor, no, that's not the real bracha. That can't last. You see, the real bracha is that you'll have the internal shalom. You see, your nature will be improved. And naturally, a simon of that is, you see, people get along. That shows them they must be internally perfected. Because if they weren't internally perfected, it's impossible. They couldn't get along. You see? So if you take that approach, you see that Rashi makes sense. Because what's Rashi saying? Rashi's saying, we see from here, you learn from here, that shalom is equal to everything. If he was talking about the functional or practical shalom, that wouldn't make any sense. Not equal, it's another factor. It's a necessary prerequisite. But Rashi's saying, the shalom that the pasuk is promising you is a shalom that results from internal. That is shalom connected. Because the purpose of everything, really, is to perfect a person internally, his nature. That is the purpose of life. You see, that is the purpose of everything. That a person should have an internal perfection, an internal harmony. You see, which manifests itself only in one way. It manifests itself outwardly by having social harmony. Social harmony is a clear indicator that the members of the society have an internal perfection. Because that's the first place where the internal defects express themselves, the first place with regard to other people. How you going to relate to other people? You see, and if it's not expressing itself, it means you do have an internal perfection. You see, and that's why Rashi says that the shalom is connected to kulam. Because and that's why he says im ein shalom, what's the good of food and drink? Now you can't say the reverse. You can't say if what's the good of food and drink if I don't have shalom? No, it's not talking about the practice. He's talking about the shalom, the whole purpose. You see, so it makes sense. If you don't have if you can't arrive at the purpose, which is the harmonious life. Food and drink, yeah, you could exist, but you can have a miserable life. So what's the good of it? What's the good of that whole bracha if a person has a miserable life? If internally he's in strife, he's in an internal milchama. No, the whole purpose is to give a person a good life. A good life means a harmonious nature. That is, his essence, his nature is working properly. You see? So I think that's the shalom of pasuk. That's the shalom. That shalom only results from an internal shalom. Right? What do you think? Let's see. Was there anything else here? Right, but I mean, I think that's what everybody's really saying, right? That's because that answers why, you know, when you say that the domestic peace is differentiated from another kind of peace, that's what you're saying. You're saying that this is a different kind of peace. This is a harmony, right? That's why you're not going to have that internationally. Unless, that's why you can never, when people say you can never have world peace, you can never have world peace. Yes, because the practicing, you require the harmony of the individuals. That's why in Moshe Mashiach, right, the Torah says there will be world peace. Why? Because in Moshe Mashiach, the other nations will have an idea of what perfection is. You see, they'll see the true system. As long as they don't see the true ideas, they can't have an idea of internal perfection. But if in Yemos HaMashiach, when the whole world has the Dias Hashem, has an idea of what the true system is, then they could partake of that nature too, that harmony also. Then you don't need a treaty. So you don't need treaties. Nations themselves will see this is the right way to be.
When Mashiach comes, does that mean, since everyone's going to have, the right ideas?
Yeah.
Does that mean they're also going to have the Torah? Or just the basic?
What do you mean have the Torah? You mean be chayiv in the Torah? No.
No, I don't mean chayiv, but like Torah Shalom Pan. Meaning, will they be able to learn? I mean,
they're able to learn that Torah Shalom Pan, right?
I thought they can't.
Only the mitzvahs, right? They could learn any mitzvah that's nogea to them. But the other mitzvahs, no. I guess they wouldn't be able to do the same thing.
Right, I guess my question is, are they able to achieve, technically speaking, are they able to achieve world peace if they really go for it now? If they
would go for it, sure. Yeah. If they would gain the correct ideas, but...
So what, meaning what's going to...
That's Mashiach. That's going to effectuate that. In other words, they can't do it on their own. If they would, yes.
But they have the tools to do it.
Well, they have the capacity, the mental capacity, but the social... they have the tools, but they don't choose to do it. Apparently, they don't choose to do it. They have the bechira. But they're not utilizing the Bechira to do it. So they're not doing it.
Meaning you don't really need, I guess my question is, you don't really need the Torah to achieve this. You only need your mental capacity.
I mean, let's put it this way. You need the Torah because the person is off the track. Right? If you have a person that's off the track, why do you need a book, an instruction book, to... theoretically, a person could figure out how to do X, Y, Z. The information that's in any book, once he sees the information, he knows it, right? You read the Torah, now you know the ideas. Oh, why couldn't you get the ideas before? I don't know.
Right.
But insofar as you can't attain that knowledge on your own because of either personal limitations or the situation that you're in, you don't have... there's a barrier. There's a barrier blocking you, so you have to remove the barrier. You need the Torah to show you the ideas.
Right. But God didn't give them the Torah, though.
What's that?
God didn't give the other nations the Torah.
Well, he gave it to the Jews, and the Jews, they have now, Jews could teach it to them. The Jews could teach it to them. If they're willing to understand, if they're receptive, then Jews would teach it. Insofar as their mitzvahs pertain to them, we would teach them and show them the true ideas, if they're receptive. If they're not receptive, obviously you can't, there's no way to teach them. But the purpose of the Torah is that the value systems and the truth, the true ideas should be communicated to the Goyim as well. They're supposed to have that knowledge also, but they're not receptive. So you must have Mashiach, they'll be receptive. Once they're receptive, then they could rise to a higher level. Then you could have peace. Then you could have peace, yeah. Okay, yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay.